Major support for The Reading Life comes from Octavia Books, an independent New Orleans bookstore. Additional support comes from the University of Louisiana Lafayette Press and the Hellas Foundation. Hello and welcome to The Reading Life, your weekly look at the Louisiana literary scene. I'm Susan Larson. This week I'll be talking with Joe DeSalvo Jr. and Rosemary James about 27 years of Faulkner House Books and 20 years of Words and Music, a Literary Feast in New Orleans. It's a great pleasure to welcome Joe DeSalvo Jr. and Rosemary James to The Reading Life. We're celebrating 27 years of Faulkner House Books this year, as well as the 20th anniversary of Words and Music, a Literary Feast in New Orleans. Faulkner House Books, that gorgeous gem of a shop at 624 Pirates Alley, is the premier literary landmark of our city. And for more than a quarter century now, it's been alive with fine writers and great books, beckoning tourists and locals alike. Joe DeSalvo, Rosemary James, welcome.
Thank you, Susan.
Thank you, Susan.
Now, can you have imagined all those years ago that you would have accomplished all these things? I remember standing in that shell of a building when you were working on it. Did you ever think?
I can't imagine what life would have been like if I hadn't been following that building for a long, long time. I always liked it. And when it came on the market and stayed there for a while, I said, Joe, you want a bookstore. You can't get a better site than this. We better do something about it. And we put in what was a lowball number, really lowball. And the guy was so ready to get rid of it that he took it. And then we had to come to grips with what it meant.
Be careful what you wish for. So, Joe, you were a book lover for such a long time and a book collector. And you were, of course, an attorney. So what was it like to finally settle into bookselling as a profession?
Well, it was finally an adult decision. I had become a lawyer because some young person I knew a long, long time ago decided he wanted to be a lawyer, and I was pretty much stuck with it for a long, long time. But it was an escape. It was really turning an avocation into a full-time profession of sorts. I hate to say profession because it's too much fun to be a profession.
It's a calling, really.
Yes,
it's just a calling,
it is.
You know? And Rosemary, you had written books, you've been a journalist, and you have this ferocious interior design talent that you turned to Faulkner House and made it this little gem of a place.
It's that Virgo obsession, Susan. We had the place. When I looked at it, I said, I can't live in this place, because the Mississippi dentist who had owned the building before we did had saved the building by repointing all the brick. But when we bought it, it was brick, bare walls, very dark, and no millwork. He had stripped all of that out and much of the plaster. So really what we bought was the plaque and four good strong walls.
And a great spot in the quarter. So then you began to build these wonderful things that came along with Faulkner House. The Pirates Alley Faulkner Society, which is such a strong literary support group. Then the Wisdom Writing Competition and Words and Music, a Literary Feast in New Orleans. So talk about those early years of doing those things.
Well, Joe and I decided that when we really got into the renovation, and we were egged on a little bit by Kenneth Holdridge, that there needed to be a Faulkner Society, because no other writer who had worked in Louisiana had won the Nobel Prize. And he wrote his first novel there, and he brought great acclaim to a city he spent only a year in. And so we thought it was wonderful to start a Faulkner Society and make a nonprofit out of it. And we also wanted to share the building with others. And so this all came as a motivation to start the society. You may recall me talking about this. We, on a lark, decided to call the opening of the Faulkner House books the first annual meeting of the Pirates Alley Faulkner Society. And we invited 500 people and 450 showed up.
Right.
So we had a wonderful program at Le Petit, and then we followed that with a block party in Pirates Alley. It was a black tie event. And people that night said, you know, we had so much fun. It was so enlightening. You need to do this every year. So that was the beginning of the Faulkner Society. We filed for a 501c3 immediately after.
Well, I remember that party because I remember meeting Julia Glass. That's one of those great parties that lives on in legend. You know what I mean? And from the very beginning, you had great writers at the beginnings of their careers. So what was that like for you, Joe? You've always been so avuncular and interested in young writers and nurturing them and talking with them about their work.
It closed the circle for me. I've always loved books and was fascinated with the lives of the writers. And here was an opportunity not only to continue reading the books, but meeting the authors and getting to know them and talking with them. It was, as I said, a closing of the circle, or at least a fulfilling the last stage of my interest and desire to be with books and reading and learning and all that goes with it.
Well, I always think of you as a Boswell aficionado.
Well, I still am, and it's interesting. I still do a little work. I did a little piece on a blog recently, and I sent it to the Johnson Society in Litchfield, and they liked it so much they want to put it in their annual magazine.
Fantastic.
Yeah, in one of his early Rambler essays, he talks about universal registers where one can find the information he seeks, and also something like eBay. He talks about that. And I was curious as to what prompted him to speculate like that. And I guess at the time he was working on his dictionary and he was looking for words and the meanings of words and the usage of words. And there was no library close by that he could rely on. So he was dreaming a solution to the problem he was then experiencing.
Oh, wow.
So they seemed to like it and they're going to publish it. So
you're still reading Boswell?
Yeah, of
course.
I'll never tire of it.
Of course not. Once you have a passion like that, it stays with you.
No.
Well, now, one thing you've done, both of you, with the society and with the Words and Music, is ensure that people read Faulkner. You've had years of getting people to read his novels and talk about them and make them more accessible and less intimidating.
Well, you know, a lot of us, especially those in my generation and Joe's, were introduced to Faulkner in a terrible way. They had Sound and Fury, which is his most incomprehensible book, thrown at them at an early age, usually by teachers who weren't trained to teach Faulkner. And so a whole generation or two, at least, were turned off of Faulkner by that experience. And he really is not intimidating if you start and work your way through it and understand some of the underlying forces in his work, such as something that was always intriguing to me were some of the long improvised sentences. And Stanley Crouch, the great music critic and also a Faulkner scholar, posits that it's because Faulkner was listening to jazz in New Orleans jazz clubs when he lived here, and that gave him the idea of riffs with words instead of music. And I believe that's a good theory.
Interesting. And I always think of New Orleans as such a transformative place for Faulkner. He came here one person and left another.
It's true. He came here a pretty mediocre poet. I mean, that stuff that he was writing was kind of syrupy and sappy, if you want to get right down to the truth of it. And, you know, he had not been encouraged at home in Oxford. No one thought of Faulkner as someone who might become a Nobel Prize winner. They called him Count No Count, you know, and that's the kind of lack of encouragement he got when he got to New Orleans. And this is what I love about New Orleans. He was immediately nourished by not only the literary community, which was thriving at the time, but by people in the social world who wanted to help nurture creators of literature, and such as the Double Dealer founders, who were the first actual publishers of a piece by Faulkner, along with the Times-Picayune, which published his sketches. So I give New Orleans credit for the making of a lot of literary careers. There's this feeling that the city will leave you alone, and this is the way Richard Ford put it once at a meeting we had with him. The city will leave you alone if that's what you want while you're writing, but they'll be there to encourage you when the book comes out.
So true.
And it is true. I think New Orleanians do not interfere with the writing process, but they cheer it on.
They cherish it. They sort of value it in a really lovely kind of way. Now, one of the things that I was interested to see looking at, you know, over the list of Words and Music visitors this year, you're bringing back people you've known forever who have grown their careers with Words and Music. I think of people like Reza Aslan, for example. And how did he start off with you all?
Well, Reza taught here.
Yes.
And we were introduced to him well before his first book came out. And when his first book came out, we invited him for an event. And that was No God But God, which was a runaway international bestseller. And we had him pretty much first.
Exactly.
And he's been very loyal to us. Every time he gets a new book, he accepts an offer from us to come in and share it with our audience. And so we've had him for every one of his books.
And Brett Lott was an early Faulkner Prize.
He was at the very first one.
And Brett Lott and Julia Glass, of course.
She came later. Julia won our gold medal for Best Novella. And that Best Novella prize encouraged her, with the encouragement of people there at the festival, to expand it to a novel length. And she did, and the result of that was Three Junes, which won the National Book Award. So we're very proud of her.
One of my faves. I love that book so much.
Yeah, she's an excellent writer.
She really is. So that's one of the ways you can have a measurable impact. I mean, you can look and see the difference you've made for young writers.
Well, it's not just that either. You know, I don't have any children of my own, and Joe's children live far away. And these people have become like our children. And I think the feeling in many cases is mutual.
Yes.
And they like to come back and give back.
I remember, Joe, an incredible story that Josh Russell tells about you kind of rescuing him in his down and out moment.
He was an early winner and loved to come to the store, and he had some financial problems that I helped him with, and took him to lunch frequently so he didn't starve to death. But he's never forgotten, and he's been, you know, very loyal. And Josh, like a lot of the other young people that we've helped, will do most anything we ask. So Stuart O'Nan is another good example, who, you know, he's coming in this year, and it doesn't take much to get him to come.
Well, Stuart, you know, won our first gold medal for novel.
Right.
And at the time, he couldn't get a publisher to look at his work. And he's always given us credit for pushing him over the hump with publishers. I don't know if that's really true, but nevertheless, he feels it helped. And not only did he get his first book published, but he got a two-book contract from Doubleday. So that got him started. And now he has about 20 books in print, 16 novels.
What a career. Amazing.
I know it, and we're very fond of him. He and Julia have been particularly kind about giving of their own time to the competition. Mm-hmm. Stuart was the judge of the novella competition this year. Julia was the judge last year, you know, and that's a very difficult category to judge, I think.
And that's a very generous thing for a writer to do, to give up that kind of time. Now, one of the other things that you've done is you've made these innovative partnerships with things like The Big Read and more recently One Book, One New Orleans. And those are important community-wide efforts that you've taken on. So I wonder how much fun that's been.
Well, I can't say that it's fun, but I think it's necessary.
Okay.
You know, we have to raise some money, and that's
never fun.
But we've been fortunate, not every year, but a lot of years, to get a grant from the National Endowment for the Arts, which helps us do the big read. Mm-hmm. We wouldn't be able to do it otherwise, because our motivation is to get good literature in the hands of youngsters at risk, with the belief that if they are introduced to interesting, well-done literature, they'll find out how much fun it is to read.
Yes.
And that will set them on the course to literacy. So if we can't afford to give the books, the project is not as interesting to us. And so in the off years, when we don't have a big read grant, we've been partnering with One Book, One New Orleans, which has a target audience of adult illiterates.
Right.
And we have really enjoyed that partnership because, especially in the years when we both have the funds to do one, because we're serving both youngsters at risk and adults at risk.
Mm-hmm. So what are you especially looking forward to at this year's Words and Music? Who is it you're looking forward to hearing?
Joe?
I'm always interested in hearing Reza. He's a dynamic speaker and presenter, and I'm excited, too, about Walter Isaacson being a part of the conference. He has shown a lot of interest in what we're doing and working as much as he can to try to interest other people perhaps in supporting and helping us to survive and to continue the programs that that we've begun.
And you'll be having a wonderful tea with him on December 7th at the Hotel Monteleone.
Correct.
Which will be a lot of fun for people. What about you, Rosemary? Who do you want to hear from?
Well, I like everybody who's coming this year. I really do. I realize that from the feminist point of view, we're a little light on women this year. But we do have some gems among the distaff side,
yes,
who are going to be presenting, such as Lady Hubbard. I've always called her Lady, and Chris, her husband, recently said it's just Lady.
It's anyway, the best name, isn't it? Lady
Hubbard.
I love it.
Great name. And she has a fabulous debut novel called The Talented Ripkins. And we've been especially interested in her career because she won our gold medal for short story some years ago. And she's been writing short stories mostly since then. And so we were thrilled to see this book. And it's a wonderful, wonderful, wonderful book. I can't say enough good about it.
And just won the Gaines Prize.
That's right.
So such a validation. It's a wonderful book.
And so I'm looking forward to her, and I'm looking forward to all of those men stars too. We're having somebody I am especially interested in, and that is Adam Johnson.
Yes.
Who won the Pulitzer for The Orphan Master's Son, which is so timely right now because of all the orange-haired monsters' ramblings on about North Korea. Yeah. And that book is almost totally out of his imagination. He only went to North Korea once. This is a superbly talented man.
Oh, he is.
He's got an incredible imagination. All of his books demonstrate that. It's interesting. I met Adam when he was a student with Bob. John Gregory Brown and I went up to Bob's and attended one of Bob's classes.
Bob Butler. Right.
Bob Butler. Yeah. And John, I think, taught as a guest lecturer at Bob's class. And we met Adam Johnson then. And again, he's been extremely loyal.
I'll tell you a little story about what a wonderful person he is. I wrote to him rather late to invite him. And he said, yeah, I'd love to come. You know, as a matter of fact, I was planning to come the following week with my Stegner fellow buddies for a reunion in New Orleans. He said, I'm going to see if I can move it up a week. Well, he did. And now we not only have Adam coming, but we have seven other Stegner fellows.
That's fantastic.
And they're all good writers.
Yeah. Yes.
Some of them kookier than others, but all of them highly accomplished, like Stephen Elliott, you know, for example. And I think that's going to be a fun event. It's going to be eight writers talking about writers.
Well, the kookier the better, as
right,
we say,
yeah.
You know. This is your last year organizing Words and Music. That must be both a relief and bittersweet and all kinds of things.
Well, you know, Words and Music was taken on by the Faulkner Society. And in the very beginning, we made a separate nonprofit out of it because we always thought we would spin it off, mm-hmm, much quicker than is actually happening to a third party.
Right.
And we only took it on because Beverly Gianna's writing conference, which was very good, was about to fold because of her mother's illness. And she had to stop and take care of family. So we decided to take it on and with the urging and the financial support of Ian Arnoff, who was chairman of First National Bank, and some others. And he raised a lot of money for us that year. And so we did it, and we had 100 writers the first year, which was the 100th anniversary of William Faulkner's birthday. And we were off and running. We thought we had a great thing going. We got knocked for a loop by Hurricane George, which
right.
put us way in debt because the people were already in for the festival, and we had to send them home before we could capitalize on that. And so it took us a while to recover from that. And we've been rebuilding the festival since then, and all the time looking for a good group to take it on. And for the last year, not the last year, the last 3 years, I've been very impressed with Megan Holt, who is the director of One Book, One New Orleans. And kind of, again, on a lark, I just said, you want this festival? She said, yeah. So as of January the 1st, she's getting it.
She's enthusiastic about it.
She
which,
is an ex-
to me, is the essential ingredient to success, is enthusiasm.
And she is organized and committed. She will make good things happen. So you
she said at our last event, I'll make you proud, and I know she will.
She will.
Yeah.
Well, we've been talking with Joe DeSalvo Jr. and Rosemary James of Faulkner House Books, the Pirates Alley Faulkner Society, Words and Music, and so many things. Words and Music takes place December 6th through 10th, and the complete schedule can be found at wordsandmusic.org. Joe and Rosemary, thank you for all that you do.
Thank you, Susan.
Thank
it's
you,
been
Susan.
A real pleasure to know you for all of these years in the literary world.
Right back at you. Here's a book song for today. So many wonderful books have been written about New Orleans history. One of my very favorites is Ned Sublette's The World That Made New Orleans, From Spanish Silver to Congo Square. Here's Sinner in the Sea by Calexico, which draws on that book for their 2012 album, Algiers.
There's a piano playing on the ocean floor, drumming a requiem for the dead, and the souls hanging on every poet's breath. Running to the rock, running to the sea, praying to the Lord, please shelter me. Where the ground keeps shaking, water is boiling on fire, blood pulsing through their veins like the waves crashing on the Malecon wall. Clocks stopping at 12 on the eve of a forgotten war. Louise driving a 59. Prisoners bound in the jail, like the waves crashing on the Malecon wall.
Here's what's on tap in the literary life this week. Walter Isaacson discusses and signs Leonardo da Vinci Thursday, December 7th from 4 to 6 at High Tea and Cocktails at Words and Music, Hotel Monteleone. Tickets at Falkhouse at AOL.com. He also appears Monday, December 11th at 6:30 at the New Orleans Advocate. Marlene Trussman discusses Insan's Fair Labor Lawyer, the remarkable life of New Deal attorney and Supreme Court advocate Bessie Margolin, Wednesday, November 29th at noon at the National World War II Museum. The Louisiana Endowment for the Humanities presents Nancy Dixon, Jack Davis, Freddie Evans, and Allison Fensterstock discussing and signing New Orleans and the World, 1718 to 2018 Tricentennial Anthology. That's Wednesday, November 29th at 6 at Garden District Bookshop, and again Tuesday, December 5th at 6 at Octavia Books. Sarah Harris signs Dance Halls of Spanish Louisiana, Wednesday, November 29th at 6 at Octavia Books. Jim Rose discusses and signs Slobberknocker, My Life in Wrestling, Wednesday, November 29th at 7 at Barnes & Noble Metairie. The Bloodjet Poetry Series presents poetry with Henry Goldkamp and Alina Stefanescu reading their work Wednesday, November 29th at 8 at BJ's in the Bywater. Colleen Mooney, Tina Salvo, and Anne Benoit from Sisters in Crime New Orleans sign books at a Sip and Shop event Thursday, November 30th from 6 to 9 at Le Boulevard, 3815 Veterans Boulevard, Suite B in Metairie. Errol Laborde signs New Orleans, The First 300 Years, Wednesday, November 30th at 5 at the Pito House Vino on the Bayou event. That's at 1440 Moss Street, and admission fee benefits Louisiana Landmark Society. Laborde also appears Saturday, December 2nd at 1 at Barnes & Noble Mandeville. Damaris Phillips signs Southern Girl Meets Vegetarian Boy, Thursday, November 30th at 6 at Octavia Books. Stella Barcelona signs Concierge, a Black Raven novel, Wednesday, November 30th at 6 at Garden District Bookshop. Bob Bruce signs Cinderella Battistella, Saturday, December 2nd at 11:30 a.m. at Barnes & Noble West Bank. Laura Cayuet signs The Missing Ingredient, a Charlotte Reed mystery, Tuesday, December 5th from 4 to 6 at Trashy Diva, 2048 Magazine Street, books sold by Garden District Bookshop. And Words and Music, a Literary Feast in New Orleans, presented by the Pirate Sally Faulkner Society, is set for December 6th through 10th, with featured guests Walter Isaacson, John Gregory Brown, and Carrie Brown, Andrew Burstein, and Nancy Eisenberg, Bob Butler, Adam Johnson, Jeff Kleinman, and Deborah Grosvenor. For information and to register, check out wordsandmusic.org. The 16th Annual New Orleans Book Fair takes place Saturday, December 9th, from 11 a.m. to 5 p.m. at Cluett Gardens, Cluett and Royal Street. Tubby and Coo's Mid-City Bookshop is partnering with local author Bill Lofilm for 3 fiction writing workshops in December, the first 3 Saturdays from 2 to 4 at the bookshop. Classes are capped at 15 students for each day. Contact Bill Lofilm directly at nolabill@cox.net for registration or tuition info. And a big shout out to Jessamine Ward, who made history earlier this month by becoming the first woman to win 2 National Book Awards. Her first was in 2011 for Salvage the Bones, her second for the brilliant Sing, Unburied Sing. This follows winning a prestigious MacArthur Fellowship. Major support for The Reading Life comes from Octavia Books. Additional support comes from the Christwood Retirement Community, the University of Louisiana at Lafayette Press, and the Hellas Foundation. The theme song and end music for The Reading Life are by Matt Perrine and Sunflower City. The Reading Life is produced by George Engmeyer and is a production of WWNO. You can listen to us anytime or subscribe to our podcast at wwno.org. And you can email us at thereadinglife@wwno.org.